We're looking at two consequential speeches in Washington. One from President Joe Biden.
But nothing, nothing can come in the way of saving our democracy. That includes personal ambition. So I've decided the best way forward is to pass the torch to a new generation.
And one from Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
For the forces of civilization to triumph, America and Israel must stand together.
And later, an update from Kyiv and the latest on Typhoon Gamey. Today is Thursday, July 25th, and this is VOA's Flashpoint Global Crises. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. Two important speeches by world leaders were given in Washington on Wednesday. In the afternoon, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu spoke to a divided Congress, while fierce protests took place outside the Capitol. We'll get to that in a moment. First up, though, is the other address from Washington making headlines around the world. On Wednesday evening, President Joe Biden explained to the American people and the world why he decided not to stand for re-election in the 2024 presidential race. Speaking from the Oval Office, Biden also outlined what urgent challenges he sees as the nation heads towards a November vote. VOA White House correspondent Anita Powell reports.
U.S. President Joe Biden made the stunning decision to exit the presidential race from behind a screen, choosing to drop the news online. 3 days later, in an Oval Office speech that was at times hopeful, at times determined, and at times wistful, he explained why. Biden spoke of his 5 decades in public office, touted his presidential record of domestic and political achievements, but then called for energetic new leadership to face tomorrow's challenges.
But nothing, nothing can come in the way of saving our democracy. That includes personal ambition. So I've decided the best way forward is to pass the torch to a new generation. That's the best way to unite our nation. You know, there is a time and a place for long years of experience in public life. But there's also a time and a place for new voices, fresh voices, yes, younger voices. And that time and place is now.
Biden also thanked Vice President Kamala Harris, who has taken to the campaign trail with his endorsement and enough delegate pledges to net the nomination. He described her as experienced, tough, and capable, but added, "The choice is up to you." He did not name-check the Republican in the race. But analysts say Biden's stark warnings all point to one man. Jennifer Murcia is a professor of communication and journalism at Texas A&M University.
He talked about polarization. He talked about violence and political violence. Those are all things that harken back to Donald Trump and his presidency. He talked about the threats facing the nation when he first took office, January 2021. And so that was certainly about Donald Trump. But yeah, this wasn't a place for him to talk about Donald Trump. It wasn't a place for him to give a campaign speech.
The president said his job will now focus on domestic challenges like civil rights and voter freedom, gun safety reforms, the quest to end cancer, and Supreme Court reform. He also cited myriad challenges the U.S. faces abroad, with wars raging in Gaza and Ukraine, and China becoming more emboldened in the Indo-Pacific. These foreign fires, analysts say, are likely to burn in the minds of concerned voters. Thomas Schwartz is a history professor at Vanderbilt University.
That's really the concern I think people will have, is how does a lame duck president deal with foreign policy crises?
We'll find out Thursday when Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu visits the White House. The Israeli leader is also holding 2 other meetings while in the U.S., with Harris and Trump. But for the final act of this presidency, Biden remains the protagonist on America's biggest stage. Jim Kessler is executive vice president for policy for Third Way.
He's like an athlete that is going to make the Hall of Fame and is retiring and, you know, gets the cheers from the crowds, finally, you know, for a long 50-year tremendous career.
Biden clearly understood that this address would be a dramatic peak. So he used his final words to break the fourth wall with a message as old as America.
The great thing about America is here, kings and dictators do not rule. The people do. History is in your hands. The power is in your hands. The idea of America lies in your hands.
Anita Powell, VOA News, Washington.
A few hours before Biden spoke, in a few blocks to the east of the White House, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu addressed Congress as anti-war protests raged outside the Capitol and about 50 Democratic lawmakers boycotted his speech. Congressional Republicans said the speech was key to reaffirming the U.S. commitment to Israel amid the 10-month-old war with Hamas. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has that story.
For the first time since the October 7th Hamas attack that left 1,200 Israelis dead and some 240 hostages captured, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu addressed U.S. lawmakers in person Wednesday.
It's a clash between those who glorify death and those who sanctify life. For the forces of civilization to triumph, America and Israel must stand together.
Calling anti-Semitism the world's oldest hatred, Netanyahu spoke directly to protesters.
When the tyrants of Tehran, who hang gays from cranes and murder women for not covering their hair, are praising, promoting, and funding you, you have officially become Iran's useful idiots.
Gaza's health ministry, which does not distinguish civilians from combatants, says more than 39,000 Palestinians have died since the beginning of hostilities. Netanyahu addressed the International Criminal Court's allegations of Israeli war crimes.
Prosecutor of the International Criminal Court has shamefully accused Israel of deliberately starving the people of Gaza. This is utter, complete nonsense.
Several high-profile Democrats, including Vice President Kamala Harris and former Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi, did not attend the speech. Senator Jack Reed, who serves on the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, explained his reasons for boycotting on Tuesday.
Netanyahu's made common cause with far-right extremists who pursue their own agendas at the expense of Israel's security. These extremists have been elevated to some of the highest cabinet positions in the government and have encouraged Netanyahu's most misguided policies.
Netanyahu was welcomed by congressional Democratic and Republican leadership Wednesday.
This is a very important time. Our bipartisan congressional leadership recognized it as such and invited him here because our dear ally Israel is in an existential fight for its very existence. And that fight extends to every one of its borders.
Some families of Israeli hostages protested the speech, calling on Netanyahu to agree to a U.S. proposed ceasefire. He outlined his own vision for a post-war Middle East.
The day after we defeat Hamas, a new Gaza can emerge. My vision for that day is of a demilitarized and de-radicalized Gaza. Israel does not seek to resettle Gaza. But for the foreseeable future, we must retain overriding security control there.
Netanyahu's address is key to maintaining U.S. support for Israel, but comes at a time when domestic American politics is taking center stage.
He is going to be trying to at least halt an erosion of support among Democrats and try to build credit with Republicans who he assesses are much more likely to be in power after November elections.
Netanyahu is set to meet with U.S. President Joe Biden and Vice President Harris, as well as former President Donald Trump, later this week. Catherine Gibson, VOA News.
Netanyahu's speech to Congress was as much an address to the Israeli and Arab worlds about Israel's goals as it was an address to the American public about the importance of U.S. support for Israel. I'm joined by Avi Melamed. He's an author and former Israeli intelligence officer and negotiator for a look at how Netanyahu's message was received at home.
I don't think highly of that speech. I think it was mostly a speech that was aiming to Netanyahu's political base.
An American political base or an Israeli political base?
Particularly Israeli political base.
Well, how so?
Because he basically went through the whole cliches. It was like a, some sort of like a home run in context of like, in it, at least talking to the Republicans. It's kind of like preaching to the choir in that regard. So there was nothing new in his speech. It was very clear that he's going to use all these cliches. I know that people were expecting to hear something from Netanyahu other than emotionally squeezing moments or, narratives and cliches that we are all familiar with, but, waiting to hear some sort of like a more, productive thoughts about the day after or the path ahead or things like that, but it was absent in this speech. So for me, I must say I wasn't really surprised. I didn't expect that. And I think it's a shame because it could have been an opportunity to reset a more, positive trajectory. But I don't think that Netanyahu was planning to do that anyhow.
So a missed opportunity in your point of view. Now, of course, the speech was given in the United States, so it was important to an American audience as well. On this side of the ocean, who was he trying to convince? What was his goal in speaking here?
Well, I don't think he was really trying to bridge the clear opening gap between Israel and the Democratic Party. I mean, obviously, he acknowledged President Biden's enormous support, and he should, of course. At the same time, of course, he also mentioned Trump and in his presidency and his, in his support of Israel, but Netanyahu's speech was music to the ear of the Republicans. In that regard, he was preaching to the choir. But the growing challenge of Israel is not necessarily in the context of the Republican in the States. It's the Democrats, because we should pay attention to the fact that the vice president was absent and Nancy Pelosi was absent and some other dozens of Democrat Party members were absent, and it's clearly indicating the ongoing process. It didn't happen yesterday, it didn't start yesterday, but there is an ongoing process, a very disturbing process of growing friction and gaps between Israel and the Democratic Party in the United States. And I didn't hear anything in Mr. Netanyahu's speech that was basically able to lay foundations for starting to rebuild and healing the fractions with the Democratic Party.
You've served in the past as an advisor for Arab Affairs. You've been a negotiator during the intifadas. What do you think the Arab audience took home from this speech?
Well, I was like, I was going quickly, quite briefly, over reactions in the Arab world to the speech. As you could imagine, the very common response is that Netanyahu actually is intending to continue the war in Gaza. The other thing that comes across again, it's not surprising, it's been there all the time, is that as far as from the Arab perspective, at least some of the commentators, once again, they indicate that, Israel is dependent upon the United States, and it's the United States support that enables Israel to continue the war in Gaza. So in that regard, to the best of my reading, the initial reactions from the Arab world, there's nothing significantly to indicate. Other, of course, than the fact that generally speaking, as you can understand and probably know, in the Arab world, there is a lot of criticism on Biden's administration, arguing that administration actually enabled Israel to continue to make real efforts to stop it. Once again, one can challenge that narrative, but that narrative is definitely out there in the Arab discussion.
Mr. Malamed, thanks so much for being with us today. Thanks for your analysis.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Also in Israel, after the recent killings of four Israelis by Palestinian attackers at a gas station in the West Bank, Jewish settlers rampaged through Palestinian villages, burning cars and homes. More than 450,000 settlers are now in the West Bank, and Israel is expected to announce the building of thousands of additional homes and the legalization of other outposts. If the new construction is announced as expected in the next few days, it could also spark tensions with the United States, which has always opposed settlement expansion because it makes a two-state solution more difficult. VOA's Linda Gradstein is in Jerusalem.
The handful of Israeli families at the Eviatar settlement outpost in the northern West Bank live in mobile homes in difficult conditions, but they believe they are contributing to the security of the state of Israel. Sarah Lisson lives here with her seven children.
It's important not just for me to be here, but for all Jewish people. And it's not here in Eviatar, but in all the country of Israel. The Jewish people in 2,000 years live in all the country of the world. And every time the nation of the world try to kill us.
Eviatar is one of five settlement outposts that the Israeli government recently legalized, meaning they will be able to expand, build permanent homes, and benefit from infrastructure development. The Chavat Gilad outpost in the Shomron area of the northern West Bank has not yet been legalized, but settler Yehuda Shimon says he and his 10 children have a God-given right to live here.
I don't want that someone from outside Israel come to me and told me what is my rights, okay? Because this is my land. I live here.
Many of these settlement outposts were considered illegal, even according to Israeli law, and a few have been forcibly dismantled. But the current hardline Israeli government has allocated millions of dollars to allow these settlement outposts to expand and is in the process of legalizing dozens of them. The UN's International Court of Justice ruled last week that Israel's occupation and settlement of the West Bank is illegal, at the same time as the Israeli parliament voted to oppose the establishment of a Palestinian state in this territory. Israeli opponents of settlement expansion say that having 500,000 Jewish settlers in the West Bank, as well as 200,000 in East Jerusalem, has long-term implications. Lior Amichai is the executive director of Peace Now, which opposes settlements.
This Israeli government, or these governments of Israel, do not intend to have a Palestinian state whatsoever, that they want to annex these territories. According to the government, Palestinians will continue to be under occupation and Israelis will continue to be occupied.
Several of the hardline members of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's government have called for annexing the 60% of the West Bank that is under sole Israeli control. They say they want to make sure that Israel can never be forced to withdraw from the West Bank in the future. Linda Gradstein, VOA News, The West Bank.
You're listening to Flashpoint Global Crises from the Voice of America. I'm Steve Karish in Washington. The latest on Typhoon Gemi as it wreaks havoc on Taiwan coming up shortly. Now to Kyiv. Russia launched another massive drone attack on Ukraine, and it looks like one of those drones found its way into Romania, a NATO country. Correspondent Anna Chernikova has the latest from Kyiv.
In the early hours of Thursday, Russian forces launched a massive drone attack across Ukraine. Ukrainian air defense reported the destruction of 25 of 38 incoming drones. The location of three more drones was lost after they crossed the state border with Romania for the second night in a row, the commander of the Ukrainian Air Forces reported. 12 of the Russian drones were sent towards Kyiv and were shot down at the outskirts of the city, but the sound of air defense was heard until 4 a.m. local time. No casualties have been reported. However, the Odessa region was again the main target of the Russian attack. The Romanian military, which was inspecting the Romanian bank of the Danube River after the Russian drone attack on Ukrainian ports on July 24, found the wreckage of a Russian drone on Romanian territory. This was confirmed by the Minister of Foreign Affairs of Romania, Luminica Odobescu. Odobescu added that Romania has informed its NATO allies about the incident and is coordinating its actions with them. Meanwhile, the situation in the Donetsk and Kharkiv regions of Ukraine, where Russian forces continue intensive ground assaults, is very complicated. The Ukrainian military is trying to fight the Russian forces out of the village of Progress in the Pokrovsk direction, which was captured by the Russians a few days ago. In general, the situation in that area is tense. Ukrainian troops are trying to maintain defense in the direction of the village of Progress and neighboring villages. It is becoming more and more difficult for Ukrainians to keep the defense lines, as Russia is concentrating a significant number of troops and equipment in that direction, which outnumbers Ukrainian forces. President of Ukraine Volodymyr Zelensky reported he received a report on the training of the Ukrainian military and the deployment of Patriot systems in Ukraine. He said Ukraine will receive everything it needs to endure and achieve its goals. Commenting on Dmytro Kuleba's visit to China, Zelensky said it is a clear signal that China supports the territorial integrity and sovereignty of Ukraine, and noted that the trip only confirmed that China will not supply Russia with weapons. He did not provide any further details. Zelensky did not specify if Chinese officials said they won't provide weapons and technological assistance to Russia. The president also held conversation with the participants of the 2024 Olympic Games. He called it an achievement of the Ukrainian nation that Ukraine is participating in the Olympics in a time of great war and full-scale Russian terror. The president also thanked the organizers for banning Russian athletes from representing Russia at the Olympics. Anna Chernikova, VOA News, Kyiv.
In Hong Kong, a defense lawyer said Thursday that prominent publisher Jimmy Lai will testify in his own defense in the landmark national security case against him brought under a Beijing-imposed law that has all but wiped out public dissent. Lai was arrested in 2020 during a crackdown on the mass pro-democracy protests that rocked Hong Kong. He was charged with colluding with foreign forces to endanger national security and conspiring with others to put out seditious publications. If convicted, he faces up to life in prison. Elsewhere in Asia, Typhoon Gaimi has left parts of the Philippines underwater as the storm hits southern Taiwan on its way to China. Reuters' Diane To has the story.
Typhoon Gaimi was the strongest cyclone to hit Taiwan in 8 years. The weather authority says the storm made landfall around midnight on the northeastern coast of Yilan, packing gusts of up to 141 miles per hour before weakening. The storm cut power to around 500,000 households in Taiwan, though the local power utility said most of it had been restored by midday Thursday. The government said on top of the two people killed in the storm, more than 260 were counted as injured. Gaimi dumped rain across the island, with eyewitness video showing floods in the southern city of Kaohsiung. Fire officials also said a Tanzania-flagged freighter with 9 Myanmar nationals on board had sunk off the city's coast. Authorities said they were searching for the crew, who have not responded to communications. Separately, Philippine officials said they were investigating whether a sinking of a marine tanker in rough seas off their own coast on Thursday was related to the storm. Gaimi did not make landfall in the Philippines, but flooded the capital Manila and nearby towns the day before, with hundreds of homes still without power. Officials said at least 14 people there had died. Meanwhile, Gaimi is now barreling toward mainland China, where forecasters there say they expect a less intense storm but heavy rain in many areas. State media reports authorities gave warnings for coastal provinces Fujian and Zhejiang, suspended train services, and relocated some 150,000 people.
That's Diane To of Reuters reporting for us. And that's going to wrap up today's show. There's more VOA coverage 24 hours a day on our website, voanews.com, and across our social media platforms. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thanks for listening. Until tomorrow, I'm Steve Karish.
For deeper dives and expert analysis, listen to VOA Podcasts. Issues in the News explores the biggest stories every weekend, while International Edition keeps you informed every weekday. Plus, with the 5-minute newscast at the top of every hour, you're always up to date.